The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Thursday morning to you. It is a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, Visa.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. However you're taking us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. It is Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9, so much more than a producer. Live from Bar Canada at the D. What's happening, man?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm good. Headphones aren't very great today, but you know, that's great.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Got it. We'll get that worked out.
Awesome. Gate, I believe you kids call it. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the show today, Zach and Crack. Zach Cohen will join us, talk NBA and French Open, which we'll talk about momentarily, believe you me. And then, of course, the Crack Man, unscripted Bill Krakenberger, will come on the show. Plus, and it says here in my rundown, Kelly, and I know it says it in my rundown because you wrote the rundown, it says, Ben Wilson on college baseball, comma, all-around nice guy. Kelly makes judgments on our guests now as well. So if it goes the other way, I'll let you know as well.
I think it said Live Bet Sunday co-host with Kelly Bidlin in front of it.
It too. Did, yes.
And then overall
and then
nice guy.
All overall nice. Overall nice guy, pardon me. Yes.
I never know if you're
going to
catch
Ben things. Is, like, by the way.
I leave little Easter eggs in the rundown. Yeah. Like, Gil caught that
just one to see, just to see if I'm paying attention. It's like, yeah, Gil didn't notice that line. All right. Let's start with the Guardians. We got to do baseball. We got to do tennis. Let's start with some of our bets. Because last night was a by and large, quiet night in the world of sports, meaning that there was no basketball game. There was a hockey game, which was awesome. Edmonton comes back to beat Dallas 5-2 and even up their best of 7 Western Conference Finals in the NHL at 2 games apiece. So both the East and the West are 2 games apiece. But Edmonton spotted Dallas 2 goals in the first period. When I say first period, I mean like first minute and then first 6 minutes. So it was 2-0. Edmonton's crowd was quiet. Remember our buddy Andy McNeil, who's from Edmonton, Alberta. He's got Dallas Stars futures, but he's like, it is awkward. He says, like, I have my bet, but I wouldn't be so sad if they lost because for the people of Edmonton, it would be so awesome. And then Edmonton scores 5 in a row, 2 in the first period alone to tie it up in the first frame. But it was amazing. There was a play where there was a sequence where Jake Ottinger, the Stars goalkeeper, got a save because his stick independently made a save. His stick ended up behind him, and his stick made a save. So not your common stick save, but the stick doing its own thing. And then there was a goal later where Connor McDavid purposely shot the puck off of Ottinger's pads to get it to his teammate Bouchard, who put the biscuit in the basket. It was just an amazing, and they were talking about it. Wayne Gretzky and the crew were talking about it on the broadcast last night. So that was great in sports. But for our bets, the Guardians go down. And that, for those of us who bet most wins by the end of May update, for most wins in the month of May, here's your update. That's over for us in Circa. They lose to the Rockies. The Guardians do 7-4. Guardians look like they were double parked that whole game. Like, they were like, we just want to go and have our day off. And that's the trippy part about the month-to-month bet is that, again, the manager doesn't know that there's anything on the line. Unlike late
the manager,
season bets.
The players, the guy in the clubhouse getting the gum together. Nobody knows.
But I say the manager because he left Logan Allen in way too long. And by way too long, I mean, what, 1 1/3, 1 2/3, I think, something like that. He was serving up batting practice. So Guardians lose, and that means for those of us who betted at Circa, which is the tiebreakers of fewest losses and then best run differential, we're done. We can't win. Only got one game. The best we can do is tie. And we're going to lose the tiebreakers. If you did bet the Guardians at William Hill Caesars, you still could dead heat, but you would need, the Guardians would need to beat the Nationals on Friday. Phillies would need to lose to the Cardinals on Friday, and the Yankees would have to lose twice to the Angels today and to the Giants tomorrow. And that dead heat then could also include the Royals on top of it. That's unlikely, but at least you're still alive. Those of us who bet at Circa are not. So,
might as well double down and just parlay them all then, today, you know?
bottom line is we got our Guardian 65-1 to the last out in March,
crazy,
April.
Man. It's crazy.
And then in May, we got it to everything but the last
what
game.
What a tease. What a tease. I mean, good for you. And I don't know if I want to say I hope everybody was doing this all along as well. But, like, you were betting them every day, too.
Yes.
So, like, you're by far, you know, covered. You're way up for the Guardians.
I want to thank Guardians. I want to thank Adam Burke. It was awesome.
He's got a lot
awesome
to do with
baseball.
His team.
He does.
I don't even know how he gets work done.
I mean, it from him.
He's working in the front office all the time.
Yeah. So that's the Guardians update, and it's not a good one. apologize for that. Now I'm getting a lot of tweets where people are like, "Are you doing? Are you doing June?" And you have been the one egging this on.
Hey! All I said is, as your friend and a better, I'm not pushing anything.
No, you're not saying that as my friend and a better. You're saying it
as
producer,
yes.
As content, as we need content. Gil, it's June. I'll take a look today. No promises. I'll look at schedules.
Yeah.
But it is. It has been a great ride. Hasn't cashed ultimately, but was fun. The biggest thing globally in sports yesterday, though, is you know where I'm going. Iga Swiatek, world number one, Naomi Osaka, in a second round match in the French Open at Roland Garros. All the outside courts were done because of rain, but they played at Philippe Chatrier. Thank you. Got it in.
Nailed it.
Just wanted to say it. You like the umpire where they're like, advantage.
Advantage! Swiatek. I'd always be like, wait, I heard advantage so clearly. I didn't hear the name, though, whose advantage it was.
Égalité. This was, and it's so funny for, like, the non-tennis hardos, some of the reactions are like, oh, man, you guys can't even get past second round. That should have been the French Open final.
Yeah, that was awesome.
The quality of play from Naomi Osaka was off the charts. And nobody could have possibly expected this from her on clay. Now, remember, the only two people on tour who have four slams, the only two people on tour who have three slams to their names are Iga Swiatek, who has four, and Naomi Osaka has four. But Naomi Osaka has four on hard courts. This was before she became a mom. So we're talking a few years back. But Naomi Osaka, when she is at the top of her game, I mean, the big takeaway from this, by the way, ought to be, oh boy, U.S. Open. Let's see what Naomi Osaka's numbers are once we get to the hard courts. But this match was incredible. When we were here on air, Iga was up a break in the first set. And as soon as we got off air, I think she was up 4-3, 40 love, and she gacked it. And she ends up winning, Iga does, the first set in a tiebreaker. She's like, okay, well, right at the ship. I was just doing it. And then I had to do Ed Feng's podcast. Not had to. Ed was kind enough to put me on. What I mean was that I had an obligation. And so I'm kind of watching while doing the podcast. Poor Ed, I apologize. I have no idea what my answer is.
Oh, yeah.
No idea. Because I did say at one point, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm watching it. Because Naomi crushed her in the second set. And then in the third set,
she looked good. I'm with you. Like, she looked, I thought you were toast. I had it on a TV.
This was top level tennis. This was top level tennis. Naomi Osaka deserves all the credit in the world. By the way, what a contrast to remember when she had like the mental health issues and we had so many people, even on our air, it was embarrassing, right? Said, oh, look at her with a mental health problem. When you have a fraction of her accomplishments in life, get back to me. So she's up. Naomi is. Two love in the third set, she's up a break in the final set, two love. But it's love 40, so you're like, oh, here comes Iga. Nope, Naomi comes back and wins that, it's three love. And then you're like, wow, this, like, I don't even know what I'm watching. Then it's 1-4,
yep.
Iga's serving, and Naomi has a break point to go up 5-1. And Osaka, the first sign of a little nerviness. She hits a backhand into the net, unenforced. And so Iga ends up winning that. It's 4-2. But Naomi gets it to 5-2. So it's 2-5, love 30. Iga serving, 2-5, love 30. This is the point that will get forgotten. 2-5, love 30. Naomi Osaka is 2 points away from upsetting the world number one on her greatest surface in her greatest stadium. And Iga hits a forehand screamer that hits the line in the corner. If that's a centimeter longer, Osaka has three match points. It was an unbelievable shot by Iga. And she ends up holding serve, and it's 5-3. And this is where, now Naomi is now serving for the match on her racket. This is where the Osaka nerves happened. And this is where, yes, as great as Iga was, it was also just Osaka becoming unraveled. People will remember this. At 5-3, 30-15, again, 2 points away from winning the match, beautiful first serve. Swiatek lunges with a backhand. She does all she can to even get it back in play. Swiatek is sprinting left to right, so there's a full court behind her, and Osaka hits the volley into the net, unforced. That was the first thing. Wide open court, smash, put it right into the net. Then 30-30, Iga gets a gets again in an unfavorable position. Osaka hits it long, 30-40, and then Osaka recovered, got a match point. Iga Swiatek, the world number one, has never won a match when she's faced a match point before until this. She gets a second serve, and Iga hits this ridiculous backhand angle that Osaka can only hit into the net. She ends up then getting it to a break point, and Osaka double faults. And we're back on serve. And there was a couple other times when it was 5-5, because Iga got it to 5-5, where Osaka was serving, and Iga pulverized a forehand winner when it was add in. Osaka had a point to go up 6-5. Iga pulverized a forehand winner. Add in again. Iga backhand smash behind her. Then Osaka double faulted to make it 6-5. By the way, the one that went to 5-4 was not the double fault. It was Osaka rushing to the net, and she hit a backhand long unforced. So it was equal parts. Again, it was just nerves for Osaka, like, oh my God, I'm so close. And then Iga just being so stealing. Iga ends up winning it, by the way, maybe the greatest shot, 30-15 up 6-5. A backhand angle winner. That was just a thing of beauty. And Iga Swiatek survives. And we survive with all of our future in what was the highest quality match you are likely to see in this entire tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. I watched a lot of that second set, and I was like, Gil's toast. And then I was doing some things around my place. I just kept walking back and forth to TV, and I'm like, that's getting a little better. And then watching the very end of it, it was great.
She's pretty good.
Yeah.
She's pretty good. Swiatek, updated, -165 to win the tournament. We'll come back. Zach Cohen will join us. His French Open plays. Oh, I've got a three still to come. And NBA thoughts. That's next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game presented by Zyn Nicotine Pouches, America's number one nicotine pouch. Find out more at Zyn.com. And for a limited time only, we're slashing the price of our annual subscription. When I say limited, I mean tomorrow is when it ends.
Dunzo tomorrow.
Normally $240, you can now secure your subscription for just $199. Sign up today. We'll throw in an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code ANG. But hurry, it ends tomorrow. With VSiN Pro, you'll get immediate access to our daily best bets, complete with a leaderboard showcasing the hottest VSiN experts, betting splits that reveal where the money and bets are trending for every game, exclusive betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video content. Remember, though, tomorrow is when it expires. Expired! So visit VSiN.com/subscribe now to grab your 14 months of VSiN Pro for just $199 with promo code ANG.
ANG like a numbers game.
ANG. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Barcanada, the barrage here at the D. We get tweets at Beating the Book from T. Sheldahl. He says, I couldn't let the Guardians hurt me again, Gil, so I took the Royals 35-1 this month, so yeah. Anyway, check out the Mariners schedule next month, he says. Okay, I will. Let's see here. So this John Fitzgibbons is tweeting about this. Did you see this play? We talked last week about this play that ended the Orioles-White Sox game where Andrew Vaughn of the White Sox was on second base. There was one out. There was one in the first and second.
You made me watch it. It was incredible.
Yeah, like his back is to the outfield.
Most ridiculous thing I've ever seen.
The infielder grazes him. I think it was Gunner. Who was it at the time? Maybe it was Gunner. Infielder grazes him, makes the catch.
Don't tell me that happened again last night.
Oh, the Yankees have the bases loaded against the Angels. There's a pop-up to second base. So, you know, Juan Soto sort of lollygags back to second base. He's on second. And again, but the infielder misjudged it. He was in front of it and had to back up into him. So he grazed it. He goes into Soto. They call...
Same thing?
They call Soto out. Aaron Boone goes ballistic. I don't have the audio.
At least they're consistent.
Aaron Boone goes ballistic. He gets tossed, right? And not only that, they called the infield fly rule. So let me just add this layer. So the batter is out no matter what.
Right. Yes.
And so calling interference on Soto also gets to this level of we're not even talking about the actual baseball course of events anymore. Like it's an infield fly rule. It's insane. I don't know what's going on.
I don't even understand how you can call runner interference on an infield fly.
I don't know.
Because like you're saying, a guy's out anyways.
Kevin Ryan, Gil, unfortunately, baseball is by far the hardest sport to win on. You probably win Cleveland best record, if not for getting taken down by the two worst teams in MLB, hence the whiskey and revolver. He's right. The Guardians' kryptonite this month was the White Sox and the Rockies.
Who's that? Nick Bogdanovich's line?
That's right. Nick Bogdanovich's That's line. That's exactly right. And then Steven Vegas texting about there's so much drama in baseball. This guy, Jorge Lopez, who pitches for the Mets, who...
Epic.
Terrible outing, throws his glove into the stands... Post-game interview says I play for the worst team in baseball, and the Mets are like, DFA, buddy.
I'm becoming a Mets fan just from some of these guys. That's a great way to say I quit.
Designated for assignment. And then finally, I think this tweet, we got so many EGA tweets, but this one sums it up best. This is from Iron Wing Cards. EGA just showed the will to match her skill. What a performance. On that note, Zach Cohen joins us, ladies and gentlemen, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He's the glue that holds this whole operation together. VSiN writer, all of his stuff, multiple sports at VSiN.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Betting on X. What's happening, man?
Oh, tennis is we're getting to watch. There will not be a lot, but hopefully we get to see some more today.
Yeah, well, first part of Zach's comments got cut off, but what he's saying is it looks like we've got rain again. I have a bet I was just telling you off of Nakashima and Orkats. Over in games. Nakashima has to win one more game for that to cash, and then rain. Sorry. Now you got to wait 5 hours or however long it's going to be. It's super frustrating.
Can they get a couple of the olds out there in the mud just to, like, play to entertain the fans? Like, I'd watch that. Are you kidding me? Like,
in the mud.
You're like Makaro out there to play in the mud?
I'm not sure if you know what happens to a tennis ball in the mud, but it doesn't really bounce.
Well, let's get a racquetball then or something like that. I don't know. Figure it out.
You haven't, just for giggles, whenever these get played, do you have anything left on the card today, Zach?
I do. I have Anna Kalinskaya -150 against Bianca Andreescu. Andreescu just won her first round match, but that was her first win since Wimbledon of last year. She beat a player in Sarah Cerebes-Tormo, who has a hold percentage of like 50%. Really just a bad server, someone that struggles with power players because a player like Andreescu can crush her serve. I don't think that she's going to see that type of matchup against Kalinskaya, who's been one of the breakout stars of 2024, 15-10 on the season, really solid all-around game. I'd be surprised if Andreescu were to find a way to beat her, with so much on-court rust. And then I also took Irina Camelia Begu +134 against Linda Noskova, which is just a play on Begu, who's just a proven clay court player in her career. Noskova is only 4-6. On clay at the WTA level, 10 total matches. That's a huge difference in experience. Begu's played over 100 matches on clay in her career. So I just kind of think she's going to find a way to get the job done against Noskova, who's really, really talented. I just think there's going to be a learning curve here as she plays in the French Open, where Begu made the fourth round in 2022.
I love the Begu play. It was one of the last ones I cut for my card, so I didn't play it. I have regrets before it even starts that I didn't, but I like that play. I have three still to come. I have one on the men's side, Flavio Cobolli at +178. You can probably get a couple pennies better than me against Holger Vitus Nadskov Rune. Kelly, you like that name. So Cobolli at +180. I also have Vika Azarenka. I got her at -103 against Mira Andreeva. Azarenka is a bit of a favorite now. I would still play her. I wouldn't let it get past -120. And then I still have Mayara Sharif, the Egyptian, as a $3 dog. I actually got her +308 against Maddie Key. So I think the clay court run ends for Maddie against Sharif today. I like the $3 dog. So those are the ones that I have that have not started. I have others, couple others that are, actually I have three others that are in play and interrupted, which is a whole bunch of fun, as you know. By the way, you buried the headline on Kalinskaya. Yannick Sinner and Kalinskaya are a couple? What is that?
Yeah.
Oh my.
That's a power couple for the ages. I mean, that's a really, really good one. It was kind of a secret at first, and the Twitter detective saw, a picture where his phone was being called by an Anna.
Yeah.
That's I believe how the rumor started, and then they were spotted out together in Rome.
But, how did the rumors get started? Wow, this is Real Housewives.
I believe it was they took a picture of him like with his coaches outside, and on his phone, like if you zoomed in, he was getting a call from an Anna.
Oh, Anna. And it just happened to be her.
This is like the Tyrese Halliburton FaceTiming from the locker room situation. Yeah, that was incredible.
I don't know that one. What's that?
It was the same thing. Like someone took like a picture of someone in the stands getting a call from Halliburton.
Oh.
But you're like, I don't know if that's actually him or not.
Last thing on this, because I don't want to make it to the Real Housewives of the French Open, but Yannick Sinner out punting the coverage there, right? Wouldn't you say?
Well, I mean, if you watched Breakpoint on Netflix, Taylor Fritz's girlfriend, Morgan Riddle, said that Jannik Sinner was very cute. So
I've never heard of Morgan Riddle at all. Definitely don't follow her on Instagram. this is also Nick Kyrgios's ex-girlfriend.
Everyone is Nick Kyrgios's ex-girlfriend, dude.
Legend.
Everyone.
Where's he at? Get Nick back. Get him in the mud bowl.
all right, let's go to basketball. We have basketball tonight. We have Game 5 in Minnesota. As the T-Wolves try to achieve step two in the four-step process of history, coming back from a 3-0 deficit, again, 0-155 in the history of the NBA, teams that trail a best-of-7 3-0, they get the win in Game 4. Now they're back at home for Game 5. They would have a Game 7 at home as well. The Minnesota Timberwolves just keep taking money here. They are up to, well, I see 4.5, but I see some fives out there as well. We've got 4.5 as the consensus on the T-Wolves. 209.5. What are you doing with this?
I like the -4.5, honestly. I thought that the Timberwolves got back to playing really good defense in Game 4. You know, the defensive rating for this team has been about 107 throughout the course of the playoffs. It was way higher in Games 1 through 3. Got back down to 107 in that Game 4, and I thought they did a really good job of containing Luka Doncic. I thought Gobert held his own in drop coverage in that game, and they stayed at home on the shooters for the Mavericks. You know, P.J. Washington did not have, you know, a good game from 3. I thought that they did a really good job just contesting shots and not overplaying and not really letting Luka or Kyrie get into their groove. So I thought that they really bounced back strongly. I think that Lively being out for Dallas is a huge deal just because I think he's a much better decision maker than Daniel Gafford. Obviously, it helps to get Maxi Kleber back for the Mavericks, but he looked a little reluctant to shoot, a little rusty out there. So I think that this is a good spot for Minnesota. I would lay the 4.5. I probably would say Dallas gets it done in Game 6. I'm not expecting, you know, a 3-0 comeback here, but this is definitely the situation that it seems like it would be most likely that it would happen with, you know, the better team being down 3-0 and, you know, Lively being injured.
Yeah, you anticipated my next question, but you answered it with saying if you think the Mavericks do still get it done ultimately. Last thing, we got 30 seconds. Do you anticipate, if that is the case, whether it's the Mavericks or the T-Wolves, well, let's take the Mavericks since they're up 3-1. Do you anticipate being on them in the finals?
I would be on the Mavericks in the finals. I would just have a really hard time laying, like going away from that number when it's going to be two really strong defensive teams. It's going to be very similar to this series, I think, where the games come down to the final 5 minutes, but I just trust Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving a little more than I do, you know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Obviously, Jrue Holiday being out there changes things a little bit. Like, he's just such a good player on both ends of the floor, has been there before, has won a championship, but I just think it'd be really hard not to take like a +180 with Luka, who would be the best player on the floor.
Thank you, Zach. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, guys.
I have a college basketball bet next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There's only one number one draft pick. There's only one champion at the end of the season. And there's only one nicotine pouch brand in America that outsells the rest, and that is Zyn. Zyn is a smoke-free, spit-free, hassle-free nicotine pouch that can be enjoyed anywhere, anytime. Find your Zyn at Zyn.com. That's Zyn.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Advantage, be the loan. There's a male umpire who has a very, very deep voice who's on tour, and he is very aware how deep his voice is, so he milks it even further.
I was really enjoying that yesterday.
What is it? Deuce is egalite in French and iguales in Spanish, so it's like you get all...
Yeah.
All these guys.
There's not often
languages.
I've got volume all the way up until we get to the, you know, semis, finals, that sort of thing. So I was really getting a kick out of it.
I just want to say a couple other things about that match yesterday. First of all, when the final point was hit, when Osaka went wide and Iga won the match, that Iga face was not a familiar Iga face. Usually she's smiling or she's going crazy because she won a championship or she's whatever. That expression was, what the hell was that, Osaka?
Yeah.
And then after the match, she scolded the French crowd because they were like screaming in the middle of points.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
One of the biggest sub headlines of this tournament has been that the French crowd has been more unruly than ever before. And particularly, not in this case with the Swiatek and Osaka, but particularly if you're playing a Frenchman or Frenchwoman, that the vitriol against the French opponent has been. So, like, David Goffin went crazy on the French crowd afterwards. He's like, he won a five-setter against a French player, and he was like, this is unpleasant. Like, these people are ridiculous.
What is the classical most unruly rankings go? U.S. Open?
U.S. Open is
Australian
one.
Open?
U.S. Open's number one by far.
Then Australian, then French, then Wimbledon?
Right, but what they're saying is with the French Open is that it is anti-people directly, like in a way that the U.S. Open isn't.
U.S. Open
is rowdy.
Right.
But you're not going after people.
Gotcha.
Unless the player like Medvedev once ginned it up, right?
Right. So it's not just everybody's being unruly and having a good time. They're going after specific players.
He goes like, I hope you still like me after this. We get tweets at Beating the Book. This is it's great because you never know what's going to resonate. Greg Lazarwitz, who has the IU, the Indiana avatar, says a similar infield fly play, talking about the Juan Soto play yesterday in Anaheim. Similar infield fly play happened in 2012. Caused MLB to rewrite the rule to include a double play. Didn't happen again for 12 years and now two times in a week. Whoops. If Soto didn't lollygag, as you said, he's protected on second base, but not off the base. By the way, love the show. Thank you. And now here's Hoops by Hoots on the same subject. Now, Hoops by Hoots is very clear about this, but I want to have a counter comment. Hoops by Hoots says, the purpose of calling interference on the runner is because an uncaught infield fly is a live ball that runners can advance on. If that would have been bases loaded and that same play in Yankees game happened, a runner from third could have scored, and therefore you would be putting the defense at a disadvantage due to actions by the offense. Well, I think the play in the Orioles game was a bit of a reach. The play in the Yankees game last night was definitely correct, he says. Contrary to opinion, the base is not a safe haven for the runner. But Hoops by Hoots, the part that people are leaving out is that the infielder last night misplayed the ball. The ball was actually behind second base. He's in front of second base. So Soto, much like Andrew Vaughn in the White Sox game, he's not even paying attention to what's going on, and the infielder backs up into Soto. That's not Soto's fault, and there has to be some room for judgment on that. That's, to me, that's the biggest crime of all of it, is that if the infielder doesn't misplay the ball, it never happens. So, like, there's multiple levels of this being ridiculous.
Well, and of course, all I'm thinking about now is how you could. I mean, with a pop up in the infield like that, if wherever the infielder is fielding that, if you can sense that, you could almost make it like, oh, I lost it. Let me back up 5 feet. Oh, you're in my way.
That's right.
Like, it's almost like selling a call in the NBA, right?
There was a play in the Phillies-Giants game. It got a little chippy in the Phillies-Giants game a couple of days ago when I can't remember who was running for the Phillies between second and third base. He tried to throw an elbow out to get, like, an interference call. All right, I made a college basketball bet yesterday. Of all things, I know you're like, what, college basketball? I bet Alabama to win the national title next year at 18-1. I have been meaning to do it for a while, but yesterday it's like I can't wait any longer. This team, the big news yesterday, Mark Sears is coming back to Alabama. The do-it-all point guard that was obviously shining in Alabama's NCAA tournament run last year. He's coming back. He's withdrawn from the NBA draft.
Got a few of these guys now, right?
This team, Aiden Holloway transferred from Auburn. So Sears is coming back. Latrell Wrightsell's coming back. Grant Nelson, who was amazing in the tournament, he's coming back. They got this kid from Rutgers, Cliff Omorie. Houston Millett, full disclosure, I've known Houston since he was a kid. Houston Millett transferred from Pepperdine. He's going to be a key cog in the wheel. They are loaded. Loaded. Grabbed them at 18-1 yesterday. I'm all over Alabama, and I can imagine having a massive position on the Crimson Tide next year. Kansas and UConn obviously getting love as well from the college basketball community, but Alabama is who has gotten my bet. Ben Wilson, who Kelly referred to as a call him? Overall good guy in the rundown this morning. He's going to join us talk College World Series here momentarily. Here are my three College World Series bets. I did not make any of the regional bets. I know Matt Grissom came on the other day and he listed them. I have not gotten around to doing it. But I do have three College World Series bets. The one at the bottom, Florida State, 35-1. I made that some time ago. Their ace is Jamie Arnold. And with all the College World Series and what precedes that in the regionals and the super regionals, they're going to manipulate the schedule so that he is in the key games for Florida State. I got him at 35-1. They're about half that right now, Kelly. And then when Matt came on with us 2 weeks ago, he talked about some outrights, and he showed me his rankings. And based on his rankings, mm-hmm. I bet Georgia 25-1 as well, and Wake Forest at 20-1. So he deserves all the credit for those two.
I like it. I made a couple yesterday, too. Another tale of Matt Grissom. I played Oklahoma State at 45-1. He talked about them last week. Did find a 23 out there. Circa actually had 23 on Florida State.
Nice.
So I'm in on Florida State, and I said, well, I might as well play him to win the regional this weekend.
Where did you go to school, by the way?
Florida State. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Curious.
A little bias here. Yeah, I know. Shocking. I don't actually don't know who college
baseball I'm sorry.
I don't know
Chris
whose college
Singleton.
Baseball's bets those are. Those aren't mine.
Oh,
must
yeah.
be Kelly Oubre's.
Oh, those aren't your bets?
Or Kelly Olynyk's. So well, how you spell Kelly.
Wait, so how did – oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, EY. By the way, are you excited for the NBA draft? Is Freezing Cold Takes going to put out your Freezing Cold Take again?
I don't know. We'll have to see. I was going to add on to your Alabama bet, though. How many big-time college basketball players have all withdrawn from the draft in the past, like, 48 hours?
Yeah.
Like, the kid from Arizona just withdrew.
Caleb Love, you're talking about going into his 74th season of college basketball?
Exactly. Yeah. John L. Davis, right, the kid from FAU who was going to transfer, then went into the draft, and then he's going to Arkansas now. So, yeah, you've got
to – Alabama did lose one player. Byron Pringle is going to South Carolina. He transferred to South Carolina. The biggest thing with Bama, though, in addition to all those players, I think they have, like, the best coach in the country in Nate Oates, or the second best.
Yeah, I mean, this will be, what, 3 years straight for you back on them?
Two, I think. I don't know if I did 3 years.
Oh, I thought you were on them the year before, too.
Maybe. I don't even remember anymore. I think 2 years in a row. But to me, this is, I mean, I was definitely on them last year.
With Brandon Miller.
Was I on Alabama that year?
You were.
I don't think I was.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're just making things up, I guess.
You're just making stuff up. I had Brandon Miller to go second in the draft. That cashed. But I don't think I had Alabama that year. But, so that's a huge – so that's college basketball, that's College World Series. And then there's the NBA. You didn't get a chance to chime in because we're going to have crack in the next hour, but you didn't have a chance to chime in on the Mavs and the T-Wolves tonight.
Yeah, I mean, the Derek Lively, so we did just get – I mean, I guess we got an update. He's going to be a game-time decision. I really don't know. That is huge to me, the Derek Lively news and where he's been at. To me, he's been the third best player for the Mavericks in this series, and I maybe even stretch it back further to the entirety of the playoffs. I know he's coming off the bench, but he's still better than Gafford. You just don't mess with the starting lineup that you've got going right now. So he's been huge, obviously. I mean, if you watch those first few games, what they were able to do both with him in the lob game and then him with rim protection was just huge. I think regardless, though, Gil, I'm not betting a side here. I would still lean over on this game tonight. I know Drew bet that the other night. It didn't get home. I would look over at this one. Game 6, Game 7, we're going to be back to looking at unders as these paces slow down probably. But would be a lean to the over. But if anything, Gil, with how close we've talked about these games being, I don't know that I could go out there recommending laying 5 points, 4.5, 5 points. No. If anything, I'd be taking points with the Mavericks here. So I think there's a chance I end up on the side. If I'm able, if I hear Lively's going and there's still fives out there, or maybe this even creeps out to 5.5, I'm seeing a lot of fives right now. So if there's Minnesota money that comes in, I might jump in a little bit actually on the Mavericks side tonight. It's a total point differential in this entire series is 8. You talked about it every time. It's close with 2 minutes left every time. And you're giving me 5 points with a side in the series?
Yeah. And again, not to you know, repeat myself, but I just feel like the end result of these games, particularly in this series, has nothing to do with the handicap ultimately. Did the shots go in or did they
right,
not for
yeah.
which team? Like, sometimes it's just that simple.
I mean, that's really where every one of these teams that's won, I believe, has been above 50% field goal shooting for the game. That's really what it's been.
Ben Wilson, co-host of Live Bet Sunday and overall great guy, next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We are so close to crowning an NBA champ. You know, when they get around to play in the finals. And with the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Well, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN. The crown is yours. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. Kelly, I'm looking at the screens behind you, and it says Redick, meaning J.J. Redick, is the front runner. Okay, you don't have to turn around and corroborate.
I'm not on camera.
J.J. Redick is the front runner to be the Lakers head coach. Your thoughts, sir?
I think it makes a lot of sense. Dustin Sweetelson gave me some crap about it on Live Bet Sunday when it first got brought up like a month ago. I don't think Ben was there. He takes a lot of days off because he's got bigger, better things to do. It's understandable. It's okay.
Yeah, sure.
But like they've been doing this Mind the Game podcast thing, which is awesome. But
JJ and LeBron.
JJ and LeBron. Yeah. And it's great. If you're really into basketball, it's two great basketball minds breaking down some really in-depth basketball stuff. But whether it's there, Gil, whether it's on any broadcast, it just gets a little tiring when I feel like I'm being talked down to the entire time by JJ Redick. I think he's great. He's such a good analyst, but it's just that's how it comes across on air. So I hope these two get together because you know LeBron thinks, well, I can get JJ Redick. I could put anybody in as head coach,
yeah,
and I can still go out there and win. And I'm not really ever anti-LeBron, but it just feels like a very ego move. It's going to happen. So I hope the two of them get together and then fall right on their face the first year.
Kelly Bidlin, everybody, producer number 9. Follow him at Kelly Bidlin. That's EY on Kelly.
That's right. Thank you.
Right on Twitter. Ladies and gentlemen, my rundown, once again, I will say this again. My rundown says he's the co-host of Live Bet Sunday with Kelly Bidlin and Dustin Sweetelson, comma, overall great guy. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Ben Wilson, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. He joins us now from his abode somewhere here in the desert. You can follow him on Twitter at Ben_Wilson_1. That's the number one. How you doing, Ben?
I couldn't have asked for a better intro, Gil. I mean, that's tremendous. Can we also note that J.J. Redick could potentially be the first NBA head coach who has appeared and given betting advice on a DraftKings platform? I just want to point that
out. Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, he did. Him and our pal Josh Applebaum did a whole podcast.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Ben, before we get into your College World Series picks here, first of all, I want to thank you for texting me on April 30th when the Guardians were one out away and then it went all to hell. That was very nice of you. You were not on Live Bet Sunday here recently. Kelly wasn't lying. Where did you go on vacation?
Yeah, it's very hard to get vacation when, you know, we have the five different, network, moving path. Like, I feel like it goes on for like 11 months of the calendar year for me. But I had a little family vacation in Bermuda. It was my great aunt's 80th birthday, which was great because it meant we're 4 hours ahead of the West Coast, which means watching the French Open a lot easier. And I also got to play some clay court tennis. So great time.
Wow.
Great times all around.
Is that legit clay or is that Hartree? That's legit clay over there, right?
Oh yeah, legit. It's legit clay. Their clay is sort of a grayish clay, but it very, very nice.
All right, the reason I bring that up is because most people do not go to Bermuda. Bermuda, Kelly, is off if you went directly east off the coast of North Carolina. That's where Bermuda is. It is
British.
It is expensive.
Right?
Right. It is an expensive place. What is it? Horseshoe Bay. Was that the nice place? Horseshoe Bay,
yeah.
One of the beaches. It is gorgeous. But like, Ben Wilson's of the world, they go to Bermuda. It's a fantastic place.
Hey, Ben, you know what I've always wondered about it is what's the split on like Americans versus Europeans?
Yeah, good question. I would say it's more like Americans versus Brits because it's, there aren't that many flights to Bermuda. The only international one outside of the U.S. is just London because it's a British colony. So I would say it's probably 65-70% U.S. And when I say U.S., I mean like very wealthy New Yorkers, basically, because it's like an hour and a half flight from New York. I realized this as I did my cross-country jaunt, how easy it is. With the caveat of you have to be basically based in New York or Boston or something like that. And then maybe 30% Brits from the UK.
It's like Mayor Bloomberg hangs out there, Diddy. You know, that kind of crowd.
Yeah, basically.
All right, before we get to college baseball, any French Open plays today, Ben, that you've made for everybody?
Not individually. I just wanted to, the Alexander Zverev stuff. And just before we came on, he finished off David Goffin. If you can still get him, like over 4-1. I saw he was plus 470 for the just futures-wise going into the tournament, but I mean, that's part of the draw, which is the quarter, Gil. You and Drew talked about this a bit just in the preview, but especially now that Zverev got over like the one big hump, which was obviously that guy named Rafa and how good he looked in dispatching him in round one. It's pretty telling to me. You see the odds up there that Zverev and Djokovic, who could potentially meet in the semis based on the futures, are going to be, around a pick'em or very, very tightly lined. And the Zverev numbers, the serve points and return points combined now, over the last year on clay are getting up to near 110%, which is sort of like that, the Rafa Djokovic territory that has pretty much been untouchable on that surface. But it's obvious that a guy stylistically you wouldn't expect to have such good success on, just this, you know, this massive, imposing, big serving guy like Zverev has found so much success. And I mean, I can't remember a time where he was in better form. So that would be the guy I'm kind of targeting right now. And again, Medvedev's a guy he would line up with in the quarters, who has been sort of chronically unable to really figure out clay, and has almost made a, you know, made a joke at him at his own expense about how poor he is on that surface. So that's kind of my look, at least on the men's side right now.
I like it. All right. I've had Ben on the show to do College World Series with us for a couple years now. And Ben used to say, Gil, I am not a college baseball expert, as he's rattling off like a 13-0 stretch in his game. who do you have in the College World Series? What bets have you made to win it all?
Sure. So, unfortunately, it's been a weird year where a lot of times, you know, teams I like at the, you know, say at the start of the season, will then have that inevitable, you know, midseason swoon. It's really hard to play a consistent, you know, start to finish college baseball season, and I'll just kind of wait, get some teams at good prices. And I really wasn't able to do that this year because, you know, the teams I covered early that I was really impressed with, Texas A&M, Tennessee, and yet those are your two short shots. So yeah. I did not advocate betting those teams. I personally believe those are the, I mean, for my money, who I've watched, those are the two best teams out there right now. And having gotten to, you know, call those teams, see them up close, talk to the coaches, like, I really believe it's just, they've been so good all year. There's just not really value betting them right now, but I do believe those are two of the eight you're going to see in Omaha. And should they stumble at all early, say in regionals, or maybe get down 1-0 in a super regional, that's the time you come in to bet on those teams, because right now you're just paying too big of a tax. So I would kind of just keep those teams in mind. Just, it's not really bettable right now. What I would go to, at least on the regional side, you know, one of the kind of sort of key components, Gil, we've talked about over the years, it's, you know, the, as much as college baseball can be pretty chalky, there are these sort of sleeping giant, you know, mid-major teams that get slept on. And I think one, we have the perfect kind of elixir here of really, really good mid-major who's been there before in Indiana State, who is facing an SEC team. Now they're in part of the 4-team regional here, so it's not, you know, just heads up, but that's the Lexington regional, where Kentucky as an SEC team just naturally is being moon here because of how much respect the SEC gets as the best conference in college baseball. But you look at the advanced numbers, I mean, Indiana State, better numbers on the pitching side overall, better numbers on the hitting side. Granted, you're playing in the Missouri Valley, not the same as the SEC, so you should expect some of that. But they have the Missouri Valley Pitcher of the Year in Brennan Cup, 6-1, sub-4 ERA. Mitch Hanna is their coach, was just the Missouri Valley Coach of the Year. Really, really solid manager, and led them to Supers a year ago where they lost to TCU there. So I like them to come out of that region. You can get them at 3-1 if you shop around. And, you know, Kentucky was barely in the top 100 of the country in expected fielding independent pitching this season. And they were, you know, preseason picked 5th in the East division of the SEC. So they were expected to have a bounce back year. Indiana State, that's the best value I like as far as the regional futures. And then I'll go Oklahoma in there. They're not even the favorite in their own regional. They're in the +160 range. This is another thing we've talked about in the past, Gil, where it's, you know, those home teams that kind of barely get a hosting spot and are maybe being disrespected a bit by the market. I see that being the case here for Oklahoma. They're in the regional with Duke, who just ran roughshod over the ACC tournament. They won their last three games 32-7 combined. But I kind of feel like Duke is in that position of being a little bit, you know, having peaked a little bit too soon. And I really question how you can follow up just the dominance they showed in that ACC tournament, now going into a much tougher environment on the road here in Norman. And Oklahoma's two top starting pitchers, Braden Davis and Kyson Witherspoon, I've called games of theirs over the last couple seasons, just studs there to lead that rotation, 16-6, about a 120 combined win between the two of them this year. Really hard to do in the Big 12. So those would be my two here for the regionals, +160-ish on Oklahoma. But then just keep in mind, you know, Tennessee, A&M, look to bet on them if they stumble at all out of the blocks here.
All right. So Indiana State +300, 3-1 in their regional, and Oklahoma +160 in theirs from Ben Wilson. Ben, you have a next broadcasting gig lined up where we can hear you? Anything on the docket?
We got arena football this Saturday with the Vegas Nighthawks and Northern Arizona Wranglers. And then Sunday, I will be back. I will be with Kelly on Live Bet Sunday.
You will.
Not going to be in Bermuda. Going to be with you.
And filling in for you next week.
Overall, great guy. Meaning specifically in certain pockets, maybe not. But overall,
exactly.
A great guy. Ben Wilson, thank you. Ben Wilson, everybody. Crackman Unscripted next.